Hello and welcome to the Ecocentrics. I'm Tom.
And I'm PK, and today we're going to talk about community.
And think about some of the amazing work that communities across the UK and globally have done to make a genuine difference on climate change.
Let's dive in. Today, I attended my first ever People Planet Pastry event around the corner from my office in Manchester at a really great kitchen called Open Kitchen, which is also a great community initiative that has a whole host of things, but we'll talk about that another time. And it was really good. I really enjoyed it. The food was spectacular. And it was a nice blend of genuine, what I would call businessy type people. And I would say that in my kind of world, I like doing business to business. There were some community people there as well, but we had some really great conversations. And now I think I'll actually start one where I live, and I think I'll host it under the Ecocentrics.
Most important question for you though, PK, is what pastry did you get?
Well, you know, sadly, I didn't even have any pastry.
Oh.
I had this, they made this sort of, I can't pronounce it, but it's sort of like a Mexican. It reminded me of huevos rancheros, which I love in the United States. And I miss them, but it wasn't quite, but it looked like that. And I got excited. It was really good. So they had a savory dish and then they had bowls of fruit. And so I had to go for the fruit. And then they had, after that, I was too full and I didn't eat any of the pastry.
Classic.
So a meat.
PK. Avoiding all the things which taste nice, just going for the fruit.
Yeah. So I promise you, actually, next time I will go and I will look at all the pastries and I'll think, which one would Tom like? And I will grab one of those.
Pecan plat is the answer, by the way. You need to get a pecan plat.
Oh, okay. God, those are good.
Obviously, this week we're going to talk about communities mainly, but I thought it'd be really nice, PK, for you and I to just have a bit of a conversation about some of the other news that's come out this week. So, earlier on this week, there was an announcement, and it came following the publication of a paper in Nature Climate Change, so one of the big journal publications, looking at the movement of the West Antarctic ice sheet. This is one of the ice sheets that we hear about quite a lot in the news, one of the key ice sheets which we need to stabilize to stop sea level rise. And what the study had done is it had shown that actually the ice sheet has become very, very unstable and is almost unavoidable in its collapse now. And that will result in around about 5 meters of sea level rise if we don't do something to restabilize that ice sheet beyond 2100. And I wanted to bring this up today because it's been sitting in my mind really since I heard the news on Monday afternoon. And it's something I've been struggling with personally quite a lot. And I feel like I'm maybe not alone in this space. And I think it's important to recognize that this is a very emotive area to work in.
Yeah, I saw that. I read that article briefly. It is so depressing. And actually, while you were talking, you had noticed how it can actually make you quite teary-eyed before, in our pre-conversation before we started recording. And I almost did start crying because I was thinking of the articles that have been hitting me over the last 10 days. And it's more about species extinction, about the 10 billion Alaskan crabs that have died due to starvation and because of rising sea temperatures. When these species collapse, they collapse. It is so hard for them to recover. And that, to me, is really depressing.
And I think that's the thing. And for me, I have to spend some time grieving around some of these issues as well, because it does feel like a big loss. And I think I just wanted to put it in the podcast today and make sure we talk about it, because I'm sure we're not the only people that are thinking like this and feeling like this. So if you are feeling like that, you are not alone. And I think the other big thing for us to say as well is, from PK and I's experience, we always see that these issues aren't covered enough in the media. The prime example, thinking about the ice sheet earlier this week, there was a 5-minute segment on one of the BBC shows and it didn't even make the 10 o'clock news. And this will shape the lives of future generations and species across the world for the next 100,000 years. And it just didn't even really make the headlines that much. And I think that's something that we need to take away and act on as well. I call anyone who's listening to this to let the media organizations know that you listen to, speak to them and say, we need more coverage. And this needs to be more on the agenda rather than just being left on the sidelines still.
Yeah. And sometimes we can look at the other things going on in the news at the moment. So, as of this recording, there's still the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, there's the Ukraine-Russian war, and those things are incredibly important. There's the cost of living. But at the same time, if we don't solve this climate issue, those exact same things that are taking up a lot of the news right now, that will be accelerated and there'll be more of that. So we do need to cover this and we do need to solve it. And we get really depressed about it at times. And then we have to sort of shake ourselves off, don't we, Tom? And then move forward, which is hard. But then sometimes we can look to inspiring stories, like hopefully we'll cover a few.
Yeah, and just one final thing before we do actually look at some of those powerful stories. And I think this is one thing we need to get better at, and it's something that I'm always advocating, is these systems approaches to understanding what's going on. Because actually, the issues that you've mentioned there aren't disconnected from climate change. There is so much interconnection across these areas. Prime example, there was a study which looked at climate change driving the Arab Spring in 2011, I think that was. And looking at issues around food shortages and lack of energy and the impact on air conditioning units as a result of it. So actually these things are deeply connected. There is the Al-Shabaab terrorist organization based in Somalia that exploits the fact that there is low amounts of food in the area, and that is climate-induced starvation which is coming in those communities to drive terrorist activity. These things are so deeply interconnected that we cannot disentangle them, and we need to do a better job of linking those things because everything is connected to climate, and climate is connected to everything.
You're absolutely right. There's actually a correlation, which I'll try to find at some point and link in the show notes. Weather impacts areas and resources become scarce, the elevation in conflict, which we know throughout human history, but our resources that we need to survive are going to become harder and harder. And of course, this will inevitably mean loads of conflict. And actually, in the UK and the United States, we'll experience it. It will be very, very, very unpleasant, but we'll actually be so much better off than most of the planet. Well, on that happy note, let's maybe look at some really great examples of things going well.
Let's do it, and let's genuinely see the power of people. Communities have been this transformative force and really powerful force to deliver change in and across the UK and globally. And I think it's really important that we actually start to unpack some of those amazing things that have gone on and really just understand how amazing they've been. Because it's also communities without push as well. It's not necessarily because someone's forcing them to do something. They've just self-organized and changed the narrative in local areas. And I think we'll start off with just a few examples of some places that have been doing that.
One interesting example, this is in the States, in Atlanta. It's the Atlanta Free Food Forest. So there were 7.1 acres of land that used to have pecan trees on them, or pecan, however you say that here. And it was dormant. So it wasn't being used as a pecan farm any longer. And then it was supposed to be apartments, and then it was supposed to be something else. And all of that just went downhill. But eventually, some community groups, as well as the local government, as well as some other people got involved. And it is now transformed. It is the nation's largest food forest, and it's free. So, on that, there's over 2,500 pesticide-free edible and medicinal plants. And it's only 10 minutes from the world's busiest airport, which is the Atlanta airport. And the goal of the mayor at the time was that they wanted everybody in the city to have access of edible, healthy food, which I thought was pretty impressive. So that's just one really great initiative.
The food side of things is something that I've not worked too much on in the UK. But the case study I always point people towards is this wonderful, wonderful project that's gone on in a village in North Wales. I would say almost going into town size as well, called Gwynedd. And I've probably said that wrong. So if you're a Welsh listener and I've said that wrong, I'm very sorry. But what this town has done, it's a former coal and slate mining town. The whole industrial heritage of that region was destroyed over the 1970s to 1990s. everyone, or almost everyone, lost their jobs in that community, and it was so disenfranchised in the changes that have gone on. But basically, a few community activists came together and said, "We're fed up with that. We want to do something different in our community. We want to make a difference in what's going on." So they work with several other partners, including the local authority and a few other regional players, to install a community energy scheme. They installed a community hydro scheme, which was basically using an Archimedes screw to be able to generate power. And this was the first step for them. They've used this as a springboard to do community-centric development. So they put in this Archimedes screw and they said, actually, we've got all this energy, which we can sell to the grid, and we get our money through the feed-in tariff before the feed-in tariff was scrapped. So they've got all this money coming in and all this energy being generated, but they don't really know what to do with it. So they work together. They use really cool democratic processes, getting people into the room to say, what should we do with this energy and what should we do with this money? And basically, what they decided is most people can't afford to own their own car in that area because no one's got a job anymore because of all the issues with the slate mines and the coal mines. So they pooled their money together, and they used the asset wealth that was coming from that Archimedes screw to basically create an electric vehicle carpooling scheme. So families could go from where they were to the beach with their kids then, without having to go out and buy a car, utilize the low-cost electricity which came from that Archimedes screw, and then come back. And all of a sudden, there have been all of these other impacts that have gone on. And basically, the community has started to thrive as a result of it. It's really interesting to see actually how one step in a community can make a massive, massive difference.
That is one of the best stories I've heard. And thank you for that. I think that's exceptional.
And I think it's one of those ones where it just shows what can be done. I'm based in Stoke-on-Trent, a community which has been very disenfranchised over the last 50 years with the closure of the coal mines in particular and the closure of the potteries. And when we look over to communities in Wales, which are potentially even more deprived than parts of Stoke, actually it gives us hope that maybe we can do something. And actually, and this is the really important part, when we coalesce communities with some purpose, then things start to change. There's a wonderful quote, and I can't remember the life of me who it's from, but politics divides, projects unite. And actually, when we move away from the politics of these discussions to projects, all of a sudden people start to come together and coalesce and genuinely deliver action.
Yeah, that's actually really exciting to hear. And there's other projects. The projects I'm thinking of are more around food and permaculture. But just like when we went to the Potty Plotters, look what those two women have done and what they've created. And that's a very community-based thing. And they actually, I'm sure, have impacted thousands of people. They've certainly impacted us. Not a week goes by that I don't think about what they're doing. There's also other organizations. There's an organization in Derby, which is down the road from me. It's called Down to Earth Derby. They're nature-based focused, and they've been working their hinies off, but they have really galvanized the city in such a way, which it does have its really deprived areas. But because of the work of Jamie Quincy, who's their founder, and they've got a really great team, which he's always given them credit for. So apologies if I don't name check all of them. But it was the brainchild of Jamie Quincy. And one day he just wrote a letter to Tim Schmidt with the Eden Project. And now Sir Tim Schmidt of the Eden Project calls the Down to Earth Derby project his favorite project in the entire world. Now that's saying something. Now he's been to Derby several times to help Jamie and the team get started. You know, they don't have the funding for it. So they self-generate the funding. They go out, they do these amazing, extraordinary hikes to try to generate funding. But they have transformed some areas of the city and made them green and made them lush and gotten, you know, to the point where kids who don't have a lot of access to greenery or nature can now come down to an area in the middle of the city. I think it's called Electric Daisy. They can get their hands dirty. They can see bees. They can see insects. But also, it's a great space to have community talks and lecturers, or just have a party. So I think, you know, it just takes a few people with a good vision and enough passion. And, you know, he has a full-time job as well. And I think he has two young kids. So he does this when he's not doing, you know, what puts food on the table. Having some people like this start a movement and create something really viable in the community. But we need more of this, and we need it on massive scale.
And I think that's the thing that is missing at the moment in the way that we do communities. And I say do communities in a way to actually understand how communities are engaged with at the moment. They're very much a unit which people go to for information. Prime example of it is the way that community consultation is done in the UK. So when there's big planning developments or someone's a local authority is making a neighborhood plan, they write their strategy, they say, this is what we're going to do, and they put it out for a community consultation. And basically what that is like 10, 20 pages that you click through on a website to say, I agree or disagree with this. And in reality, your voice is rarely, if ever, heard because about 15 people fill the consultation out and give their views. And when there's only 15 people filling out that paperwork, the local authorities can just say, yeah, it doesn't really matter. People have voiced their opinions. We've done the tick box for community engagement, but we haven't actually listened to the community because we know what we want to do. And this is one of the things we need to think about for communities moving forward, and actually how we engage with communities is we need to understand how we can better serve them. And I say that from my academic side as well, in terms of actually how do the institutions that we exist within better serve our communities? How do we move beyond the model where we just kind of see them as an inconvenience, and we definitely see them as an inconvenience today, to a place where communities and local people are genuinely valued in the visions and the aspirations that they can give to projects to enable better action to go on. And most importantly, for the decarbonisation side of things, actually do things which people will accept, because so many solutions are put forward which are just not fit for purpose, because no one said to a community member, yeah, do you think this will work? And picked into the nuances of why things won't work.
You know, that actually dovetails nicely into some of the conversations I had at the People Planet Pastry event this morning, where we talk about you have policymakers and legislation. And again, our political system runs on, you know, a cycle of every few years and trying to get elected and not a vision of planning out for 20 to 30 to 50 years. But you have the policymakers, or then you have another group of people that might be the sustainability people going, oh, we need to eliminate food waste. So maybe there's the excess food that was going to the food pantries that was feeding a population. Maybe suddenly that gets starved off. And then there are literally people starving. Everyone needs to come together. So you need the people who are serving the people who really need food. We've got this base over here with an enormous amount of excess food. We do need to do things differently, but it's getting everyone into the same room to really hammer out what are the real issues. Because if you aren't somebody that's experienced some of these things, or you aren't in the supply chain of that problem, you're just not going to know. And you could end up trying to do a good thing, but you end up screwing it up.
And I think that gets down to one of the fundamental flaws with the way we do democracy in this country as well. Democracy is very much seen as once every 4 or 5 years, or depending on how quick we want to call elections nowadays, shorter, going to the ballot box, putting a cross on, and there you've done democracy. You've done democracy for the next 5 years. But actually, we need to think about what that means differently and how we can have all of these new democratic innovations that are coming through. And I was involved with a project 2 or 3 years ago now, looking at a people's assembly for North Staffordshire. And it was basically to bring together a representative group of the community and say, okay, we've got this energy crisis. How should we solve this? So passing the mic to those communities to understand what their issues were. And the solutions that came out of it were A, much, much more radical than anything that the policymakers would have put forward in the first place, which was really exciting. And B, also, just a lot of common sense, really about helping people understand the information that's out there and actually access things. Because the local authorities in this case were saying, oh, there's all this information out there. But the reality of the communities were that they couldn't see that information. They weren't getting that information back to them. So all of these things which we think we're already doing aren't necessarily translating and using some democratic innovation. So things like people's assemblies, but also this amazing idea called participatory budgeting. I don't know if you know much about that, PK.
No, you've just perked my ears up.
Really cool concept where basically you hand over budgetary responsibility to your community. So there have been pilots in Scotland, and they go on all over the different parts of the world as well in more detail. But basically, what will happen is you get a pot of money, say you get £100,000, and then you get everyone in the community who wants to put forward their idea. And then everyone puts forward their ideas, they do a speech on a panel, they explain what their idea is, and then everyone in the community gets to vote on where that money is spent.
It's like Shark Den, but for the community.
So there's some really cool ideas around basically the amount of people into voting it as well. So you'll have systems where if you create an idea, it means you have to vote for at least three other projects. So it means you're engaged in actually understanding what they're doing if you don't win. There's a pre-allocated pot for one person to win or two people to win. But most of the time, when you get to the end of the participatory budgeting process, basically people are like, oh, actually, we could give you 5 grand of our pot and we could fund your project as well. And actually, a lot more of the projects get funded because there's this altruistic sense of what's going on. We're just giving people agency. And that's something that, which is always missing at the moment in the way we do democracy.
That actually sounds fantastic. And I realized I called it Shark's Den instead of Dragon's Den. Although, if we don't solve this climate issue, then sharks will be just as mythical as dragons. So, this week we have a sustainability superstar. Tom, who is our sustainability superstar that you think is really fantastic?
So this week's sustainability superstar is an organization based in Birmingham, and it's a group of just inspirational people. And the group is called Civic Square, and they've just done the most amazing things to really understand their community and drive change. So I know them from some work I did on donut economics a couple of years ago, where this group is looking at how we can implement the donut model. So how we can actually have a safe and just society for our communities. And really importantly, what this group is doing is they're asking communities how to do that. And it's not in a the classic, oh, here's some paperwork, here's a questionnaire, go and fill out this questionnaire. They just go to the park and they just sit with people. And then when kids come out and play, they get kids to think about it as well. They just do things in fun way. They use fun and play to understand the community rather than just forcing themselves on in this like tokenistic community consultation way. They just get involved with them and understand them. And my favorite thing is, I don't know if they've still got it now, but previously they had a department for dream catchers in their organization. And it was all about capturing the dreams of communities in terms of what it will be like and how we can understand how Birmingham will be a better community moving forward. That is what we all need to be thinking about. How do we utilize that positive energy to drive change?
So, if you're interested in starting a project similar to this, we can send you the links to our sustainability superstar. But, Tom, are there any other places people can go to for help?
Most importantly, go and just chat to people. I think the People Planet Pint or People Planet Pastry events that you talked about earlier, PK, great place. Just go and find people in your community which are like-minded. There will be other people that are interested in doing something. And there's an amazing group out there called the Donut Economics Action Lab as well. So it's deal.com. And on there, they've got a place where anyone who's interested in delivering donut economics in your community can sign up. And even if you know nothing about donut economics, go and have a look. See if there's anyone in your community you can just go and chat to and see what action can be taken. They've got this map. Most of the UK has people all over it. Go and find people that are doing things on there. Otherwise, go and approach some local community organizations. These are all over the UK in terms of groups that are trying to make a difference.
So, Tom, any other business before we sign off?
I think what's really important with this is because so many people I speak to are like, oh, but they're so expensive. But there was some really, really interesting research that was done earlier this year by PwC, and we'll put it in the show notes for people to read up on as well. Looking at the difference of a place specific versus a place agnostic approach to decarbonisation. And really critically, what this is thinking about is understanding the local characteristics of communities, the different people which exist within them. And using a place agnostic approach to decarbonisation, and what we mean by this is basically saying let's just use the same measures everywhere. So heat pumps work in this community, we'll do heat pumps everywhere. Electric cars work in this community, we'll do them everywhere. So using the place agnostic approach, it would cost around about £195 billion worth of investment by 2050 to reach our net zero targets. Excitingly, though, it would still deliver £444 billion worth of social benefits. So it's a massive social gain for decarbonisation. But this is the really, really exciting bit. Taking a place-specific approach where we genuinely think about the needs of communities and the varying degree of needs that are across the UK. If we took a place-specific approach, we would need a quarter of that investment, just £58 billion, to reach net zero by 2050. And the social benefits that would come from it would almost double. So it would be almost over £800 billion worth of social benefits coming from a place-specific approach. So communities aren't just this tokenistic thing that we need to think about. and places are not just these tokenistic things we need to think about. When we genuinely understand them and recognize that Stoke-on-Trent is different to the southeast, it's different to the southwest, it's different to Scotland, we can start to see that we can have much greater benefits and do things much cheaper. Because some places need support, some places don't need support, and that's absolutely fine. Everywhere is different, and recognizing that is key to delivering some of the changes that are going on and really driving home these social benefits as well. That is it for today.
Yeah, that's all we've got. But hopefully we had a bit of the serious, but we had some solutions as well.
We don't know if the quote I made up earlier is actually from a person. So if you do know who it's from, please let us know and email us at hello@theecocentrics.com.
If you like listening to us, please follow, share. We're on all the socials.
And we will be back next week with even more information.
Ciao.
Bye.